The Adventures of PC 49 by Alan Spanks, being another incident in the career of Police Constable Archibald Barclay Willoughby, with Brian Reese, Joy Shelton, and Leslie Perrins. This week's adventure, The Case of the Lone Wolf.
Victor Scully, convict on license, reporting. My papers.
Oh, yes, Scully. It's your date, isn't it? Pass me that book, will you, Constable?
Coming up, Sergeant.
Your ticket's just about run out, hasn't it, Scully?
It expires tonight, Sergeant. From midnight on, I'm not a ticket of leave man anymore. This is the last time you'll see me.
The book, Sergeant.
Right. Victor Scully... 10:45 p.m. Well, there you are. All in order. So, we won't be seeing you again, eh?
Not officially, anyway. I've been visiting you regularly for a long time now. I don't think you'll miss me.
Well, I must say you've kept to the conditions of your release perfectly. You've reported every month right on the dot. We could set the clock by you.
Well, that's the law, isn't it? I've had enough of the wrong side of the fence to last me two lifetimes. I'm a respectable citizen now.
Well, see that you keep it that way, Scully.
I will. Good night, Tom.
Well, good night and good luck to you.
Victor Scully. Where have I heard that name?
Oh, he's a bit before your time, 49. He hit the headlines when you were still in short pants.
He looks old enough.
No, he's not that old. Barely 40.
That wizened little guy only 40? Oh, come off it, Sarge.
A life sentence on the moor don't rejuvenate a man, my lad.
Ah, Dartmoor lifer, is he? Who did he kill?
Carl Broom, his partner in crime.
Broom? Seem to have heard of the case.
It was what they call a cause celebre. Broom was a regular old lag with a record from here to Bow Street and back.
And Scully?
A brilliant young mechanic apprenticed to a firm of locksmiths. He was about 19 when Broom took up with him and sold him the idea of easy money. They had a long run together and they pulled off some really big break-ins. I was on the beat in those days.
You said his name was Scully, not Charlie Peace.
What's that?
I said you'd been a long time in the police.
Oh.
Go on, Sarge.
Well, their work was pretty near perfect. Scully could do almost anything with locks. They'd enter a place, lift the valuables, and walk out again without leaving a trace. They came unstuck, like they all do sooner or later.
What happened?
Broom sold a gold-fitted dressing case to a fence. We got onto it through a routine checkup. He'd been very careless that time at Broom.
How?
Well, he'd handled the contents of a case and left his fingerprints on the back of a hairbrush. We roped him in. When he saw the jig was up, he squealed on Scully, hoping that that'd ease up the charges against himself. But when we went to get Scully, he'd vanished. Somehow, he'd got wind of the fact that Broom had shopped him.
How did he get at Broom to kill him?
He turned up at the hearing. He dyed his hair and was wearing dark glasses. When Broom went into the box to give sworn evidence, Scully drew a gun and shot him dead.
Must have been crazy.
Now, he was reckless and young, and he had an obsession about squealers. His own youth and Broom's bad record got him off with a life sentence. They let him out on license 7 years ago. Point of fact, he officially finished serving his sentence tonight when he reported for the last time.
Well, paid for it by the look of him. How does he live now?
Oh, he had a pretty big bankroll when he went in.
Proceeds of robberies?
Of course. But we couldn't prove it. So the money lay in his bank, accumulating interest. And he came out with a nice little nest egg.
And where does he live?
Oh, Lummy 49, you ask more questions than my grandson. Get on with that report of yours. I've got work to do. Oh, Scully won't trouble us anymore. He's learned his lesson.
Just on midnight, Herbie. Scully should be here any time now.
Yeah, the old boy should be pleased. There's a nice packet of stuff here, China.
Yeah, don't I know it. We was dead lucky to get on a Scully.
Yeah, and he's taught us plenty. I wonder what we'll get for this lot.
Not much short of 6,000 nicker, I reckon.
That'll be 2,000 each. Scully's straight up when it comes to the split.
He's paying out on that first job tonight. We'd be stinking rich, Herbie. 5,000 quid apiece, including this lot.
And no bother, thanks to the way Scully plans it.
Oh, he's got brains, all right. Cool. 5,000 Jimmy O'Gobbins. Well, we haven't had that much in 10 years of grafting.
Yeah, we're on a good thing at last. Hey, there's Scully now. Go down and let him in, China.
Okay. Here. Don't you start monkeying around with that jewellery, my boy. I've got every item listed.
Oh, there's a fine way to talk. As if I'd twist you.
As if you wouldn't.
Oh, hello, Mr. Scully. Well, everything went fine.
Get inside and shut this door. I don't want to be seen here.
No need to worry. Everything's Jake, I tell you.
Where's Herbie?
Upstairs. Come on.
Watch out, Mr. Scully. Here, take a look at this little lot. Smashing stuff, isn't it?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, let me hear about it.
Oh, it was a walkover.
We used them keys that you gave us. They were perfect.
Well, they should be. They were made for those locks. It's well over 20 years since I helped put that strong room in.
You helped put it in?
Yeah. Hmm. A little apprentice who held the tools. The kid who kept his trap shut and his eyes open and got an impression of those keys.
Well, they come in useful, all right.
You wore gloves, of course.
Yeah. Look, these are black silk ones, like what you said.
And you, Abby?
Well, China had the keys and he did all the work. I was just watching.
So you didn't wear the gloves I gave you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I forgot.
You blasted idiot, I told you.
He never touched nothing.
Shut up, you. How could he be all that time in a house without laying his hands on something? A doorknob, a chair back, any of 100 things.
I swear I didn't
listen, you purblind fools. I planned this job and the one before it. I cut you in on a third each. I gave you the benefit of my experience plus a lifetime of planning in prison. And what do you do?
Now, off a mouse, Cully. We took the risks and we brought the stuff back. If there's any prints in that house, they'll be mine, not yours. What are you screaming about?
You third-rate petty larcenist.
Hey?
You think I don't know your type? If the police find your prints and pick you up, you'll answer questions faster than a BBC quiz team.
Now, go easy, will you, Scully? I don't take that sort of talk from no one, see?
That goes for me, too. Anyway, we got this stuff and the last lot, too. What about our cut? We ain't seen the colour of your dough yet.
Yeah, there's a good packet to come to both of us. What about it?
Oh, well. No good crying over spilt milk. Here, China. Take these keys and go down to my car. We'll find a briefcase in the boot. Bring it up. And don't try and tamper with it on the way. Remember, I'm an expert locksmith.
Oh, as if I'd try and twist you, Scully.
Now then, Herbie, take these gloves.
What for?
Put them on.
Put them on? All right. Anything to oblige. What's the lark?
Take this chamois and polish every bit of that jewellery. I'm taking it with me, and I don't want any prints on this lot.
You seem very worried about my fingerprints.
Another man's prints cost me 14 years of my liberty once.
Ah, okay. But I take me oath I never laid me hands on anything in that ass.
Good. But it's best to make sure. That's why I always wear gloves.
Yeah. That was Broom you was talking about a minute ago, wasn't it? The bloke that you knocked off in court.
Yes. With a gun. But a knife's just as efficient.
What's that?
And a lot quieter, too.
Oh!
Sucker.
Well, there's no car down there. Of course, strike a light. Yeah, what's up with Herbie?
Why, you murdering swine.
Keep still, China. Yes, I gave Herbie a dose of cold steel because he was careless.
Here, put that gun somewhere else, will you? You ain't gonna...
Oh, yes, I am.
But you can't.
Herbie's wearing gloves. I'm wearing gloves. You're wearing gloves. No fingerprints on that knife. No prints on this gun. A knife in Herbie and a couple of slugs in you.
No. No.
A few odd bits of jewellery left here. What'll the coppers think? A brace of small-time crooks get too big for their records and try their hands at a high-class job.
But Scully,
they fall out over the swag. China knives Herbie. Herbie pulls out a gun and slugs China. Poetic justice, the coroner will call it.
You,
If you wouldn't do it, Scully.
I did it to Brum 21 years ago. And there's another bit of evidence lying on the floor there.
You're mad. You're mad, then, aren't you?
Maybe. But not so mad as to risk my liberty on the gabby tongues of two cheap little thugs.
You meant to knock us off all the time?
Exactly. You served your purpose. The stuff you lifted will be worth £15,000 to me. There's plenty more second-rate teams I can pick up. If you'd have lived, China, here's a piece of advice that would have been a great value to you. Never, never leave yourself in the power of another man's tongue. Play the lone hand.
They're both dead, all right, Inspector. One shot and the other stabbed.
Yeah. What time was it when you heard those shots, Constable?
Exactly 17 minutes past midnight, Inspector. I just completed my turn of duty, assisting the station officer, and was proceeding in a westerly direction along Overton Street when my attention was
attracted... Keep it short, 49. You're not in the witness box now.
Yes, Sarge. Well, briefly, sir, I was nipping off home after duty when I heard the pistol shots. I couldn't be sure where they came from, so I scouted around a bit and found the back door of this place open. 34 Overton Street, this is. I came upstairs and found China Clay and Herbie Baxter both dead. There was a gun in Baxter's hand and a knife stuck through his gizzard. I came straight out and phoned the station.
Yeah. Well, we can cross both these birds off the records, right? They won't be troubling us again.
These few bits of jewelry definitely tally with the stuff lifted from Cardew Court last night. What puzzles me, sir, is that neither of these two ever flew so high before. Bag snatching or very petty hoisting was more in their line.
And my theory is...
Quiet, Constable.
Yes, sir.
I don't like the look of this, right? Why are they both wearing gloves? Even if they wore them during the Cardew Court job, why did they keep them on when they came back here? It's not natural. And further, where's the rest of the swag?
They probably disposed of it to a fence immediately. These pieces are very little value. Mostly what they call costume jewelry, semi-precious stones, hardly worth breaking up. A receiver wouldn't be interested.
If they'd seen a fence, they ought to have money on them. I can't see these two have worked together for so long, killing one another over this junk. It looks as if they murdered each other, but we can't rule out the possibility of a third party doing them both in and getting away with the swag.
I agree, sir. But I'll give a shade of odds that the coroner's court will take the evidence on its face value.
My theory is...
Will you be quiet, 49?
Yes, sir.
We're concerned with facts, not theories. I think you're right, Sergeant. There's nothing here to indicate the presence of a third party beyond, of course, the absence of money and the rest of the jewelry. As you say, the coroner's court will probably settle it on the visible evidence. But I don't feel happy about it at all.
Nor I, sir.
I have a theory, sir.
Oh, 49, will you go home?
Yes, sir. Going, sir.
And take your theory with you.
Yes, Sarge. I've gone. Good night, sir. Would they listen to my theory, Joan? Not likely. I'm just a common copper with no brains. They just brushed me off.
What is this wonderful theory of yours, darling?
It's the same as Inspector Wilson's. That somebody else killed those two crooks and fixed it up to look as though they'd murdered each other.
Could be. Apparently the coroner thought otherwise. The paper said that Clay stabbed Baxter and that Baxter shot Clay. Poetic justice, he called it. Anyway, it's not your pigeon. If Wilson and Wright have any suspicions, they'll keep on plugging away until they find the answer.
I guess you're right. How much longer have I got to carry this shopping basket, darling?
Patience, sweetheart. Only one more call. Right here at the Bon Marché. You coming in?
Not likely. What do I want at a lady's draper's? I'll wait here at the door.
Okay. Shan't be long.
I've heard that before, too. Do hurry, Joan.
Three and fourpence change. Thank you, madam. Good morning. Next, please.
Oh, I bought these here yesterday, and they're faulty. I'd like to change them for...
madam. I think this gentleman's before you.
That's right, miss. I'm in a hurry. I've got a trade to catch.
I'm so sorry.
I want some gloves, miss. Black silk gloves.
Mm-hmm.
reports from Glasgow, right?
I'm afraid I haven't gone through that file yet. Anything interesting, sir?
Very interesting indeed. Listen to this bit. Two petty crooks, both frequently convicted, named Stoker Malloy and Angus Turner, have been found shot dead in a Gorbals tenement. Each had a revolver in his hand. Ballistic experts say that the bullets found in each body match the gun presumably fired by the other. It's assumed they quarreled and killed each other. Now mark this. Each was wearing a pair of black silk gloves. Does that ring a bell?
A full-size fire alarm, Inspector. Looks like we were right about the China clay case. This is no coincidence.
We'd better get in touch with Glasgow at once. Give them complete details of our case and ask for full particulars of theirs. Ask them, can we have a look at those gloves? Get them to send them on.
Joan, listen to this.
Oh, Archie, do get your head out of that newspaper and let's get cracking. You know how I hate being late for the pictures.
Never mind the pictures for a minute. Listen to this. Double murder in Glasgow. Following reports from occupiers of a block of Glasgow tenement flats early this morning, police officers found the bodies of two men, both fatally shot. Both had revolvers in their hands. Later, the men were identified as Stoker Malloy and Angus Turner. It is understood that they had been sought for some time in connection with a series of robberies with violence. A particular aspect of the case is that both victims were wearing black silk gloves. What do you think of that?
Not enough to make me late for the flicks. Come on, Archie.
Wait a minute. Here's another interesting little item from Scotland. Big Glasgow Gem Hall. Sir John Fernley of Fernley Hall, Glasgow, has reported to the police the loss of jewellery worth £22,000. During the last 24 hours, the valuables disappeared from a safe which bore no trace of having been tampered with. Police are convinced the thieves possessed duplicate keys and wore gloves, as no fingerprints have been found, and there is no sign of a forced entry. Now do you see what I mean, Joe?
No, I don't see, and I couldn't care less. This is no time for crime. It's our night for the pictures. Oh, come along, Archie.
But I want to think.
You'll think better in the dark, darling.
Not with you beside me, I won't.
All right. Leave it till the broad light of day when you're on duty tomorrow. Come on.
Good morning, Sergeant.
Hello there, 49. Oh, drop this packet into Inspector Wilson before you go out, will you? It's urgent.
Okay, Sergeant.
Come in.
What is it, Constable?
Package from Glasgow, sir.
Come in and open it up, Constable.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
This'll be those gloves from Glasgow, right? Have you got the others there?
Right here in this drawer, sir. Yes, sir. Here we are. This was the pair worn by China Clay, and these were found on Baxter.
Here you are, sir. Contents of the parcel. Two pairs of gloves.
Yeah. They're identical, all right. Look at these, Sergeant.
Yes, common type. Won't be easy to trace these back to the store that sold them.
There's a report here, too, sir.
Good, let's have it. Yeah. In response to your request for the exhibit...
Put those gloves down, 49. What do you think you're doing?
Sorry, Sergeant. Just having a look. I rather think, sir...
For Pete's sake, get out, Constable.
Yes, sir. Going, sir, right away.
Here, where are you going with those gloves?
Are you out of your senses, Constable? Put those gloves back on my desk.
Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I wasn't thinking. Morning, all.
What the devil's got into him?
Still aspiring to plain clothes duty, I suppose. Now then, let's have a good look at these things. Yeah, button top missing on this one. Left-hand middle button. Now, I wonder if there's any hope of our...
They just won't give me a chance, Joan. I was only looking at the gloves. I wasn't doing any harm. Why, they hadn't even noticed that a button top was missing from one of them. That might be a vital clue.
Button top missing?
Yeah.
Button top missing? Which hand?
Left. There were three buttons.
And the center one had the top off. They were black silk gloves, size 6.5.
Oh, I wouldn't know about the size. Remember, they'd been stretched out of shape on the hand of one of those Glasgow thugs. And if... Wait a minute. How did you know it was the middle button?
The long arm of coincidence, Archie. I wonder if it's too long for those gloves.
Now, stop talking fancy, darling. Mine's a plain brain.
Listen, copper boy. Do you remember last Wednesday when I took you shopping?
And messed up my day off? What of it?
You waited for me outside the Bon Marché.
I waited, all right. But you're going to buy the shop.
Well, I wasn't. I was changing a pair of gloves.
Remarkable. You were changing a pair of gloves. So what?
I'll tell you what. They were black silk gloves. And hold your helmet on, darling. The top of the middle button on the left-hand glove was missing. That's why I took them back.
Coincidence, darling. Pure coincidence. Glasgow's a long way from London, and there's more than one pair of gloves with the same button missing.
Wait, there's more to come. While I was arguing with the sales girl about exchanging them, there was a little old man at the counter, too. He wanted black silk gloves. He said he'd take my pair. He didn't seem to mind the button was missing.
I still say it's coincidence.
He bought two pairs.
It still might be... Wait a minute, though. Go on.
He said he was in a hurry because he had a train to catch. And listen to this, Sherlock. I think you'll find that was about half an hour before the Scottish Express pulled out from Euston.
My sacred sergeant. What sort of a little man was he?
About 5'7", a mop of grey hair.
With a yellowish face, dressed in a dark grey flannel suit, double-breasted.
Tan shoes and a tweed cap.
Furtive sort of guy, walked with one shoulder hunched, higher than the other.
That's him? But how do you know?
Because I saw him coming out of the Bon Marché. I marked him because I'd seen him only two nights before.
Oh, but where? And why notice him particularly?
Because he was a convict on license, reporting for the last time.
Convict?
Who'd served a life sentence on Dartmoor for murder. Holy mackerel. And he's an expert locksmith. He's a maniac about squealers. He went up... Listen to this, Joan. He went up for a life sentence because of another man's fingerprints.
Where are you going, darling?
Button. Who's got the button?
What on earth are you raving about?
I want the answer to a question I asked the station officer a week ago.
Such as?
Where does Victor Scully live?
You're doing with that book, 49. You're off duty, aren't you?
A good policeman's never off duty, Sergeant. You told me that yourself.
Who said you were a good policeman?
Well, there is that, of course. As a matter of fact, I just thought I'd spend a little time swatting up formal procedure. You know, the manner in which you record convicts on license, the way they report, name, address...
Well, take your great ugly paws off that nice clean book of mine and get out. This is no place for homework.
I guess you're right, Sergeant. Anyway, I've got an urgent appointment. So long. See you in the morning.
Well, of all the brass-bound young whippersnappers I've ever...
That's the place. Across the road, Joan. Number 27.
There's a light in the top window.
Now listen here, Joan. The odds are still 1,000 to 1. We're wrong about this. But I'm not even taking 1,000 to 1 chance on your safety. If we're right, this guy's a murderer 5 times over, and he won't stop at another 2.
Archibald Barclay Willoughby, I don't want any better odds than 2 to 1. And if we can't beat this blighter between
us... Oh, all right, if it's got to be hand in glove, it's got to be. But you're going to stand right here, and if I'm not out in 5 minutes...
Tell me the old story. Go and ring Inspector Wilson or Detective Sergeant Wright.
Right.
All right. Good luck, copper.
I hope we are right.
Archie, come back.
What now?
Kiss me, you big clown.
Now, Mr. Scully, here I come.
Scully's our man, all right, Inspector.
No doubt about it. Let's make one more check. He reported at 10:45 on the night of the Cardew Court robbery.
An hour and a quarter before his convict's license expired.
Both the Cardew Court job and the Fernley Hall Glasgow robbery occurred at places at which he'd been present when the safes were installed.
His own downfall was directly responsible to carelessness about fingerprints.
Both these jobs were obviously planned by a man who was fingerprint conscious.
Scully was seen drinking in the company of both Clay and Baxter on the day before the Cardew Court job.
A man answering Scully's description bought a first-class return for Glasgow 24 hours before the Fernley Hall break-in.
All circumstantial.
But good enough for us to pick him up on a holding charge. What did you say the address was?
27 Rock Street, sir.
Come on, then. Let's get in.
Suggest you stand there very quietly. True, I've no license for this gun, but the most the magistrate can find me is insignificant.
You know you're making an awful hullabaloo about nothing, sir. I merely made a mistake and came into the wrong house.
Then why the window? Are you allergic to doors?
Well, you see, it's...
I see a great deal, young man. I see a police constable who was on duty at the Primrose Hill station the last night I reported at the conclusion of a life sentence for murder.
Oh, wait a minute, you've got it all wrong.
No, I've got it right, constable. Somewhere I've made a mistake. Somewhere I've left behind a trace that set the bloodhound sniffing on my trail again. Well, no man has two lifetimes, Constable. I've served a life sentence for murder. Anything comes easy with practice.
All right, Scully. I am a police officer. I'm taking you into custody in connection with the murders of China Clay and Herbie Baxter.
And Stoker Molloy and Angus Turner, that's five, if you can remember as far back as Broome. And in 10 seconds, Constable, it's going to be six. No, 14 seconds. One for every year they made me serve, for a mongrel who never deserved to live in the first place. One. Two.
Don't be a fool, Scully.
Three.
There's nothing to gain by killing me.
Five.
You're a sick man, Scully. The authorities will realize that.
Seven.
They'll let you down lightly.
Eight. Broadmoor instead of Dartmoor. Nine.
You've got no chance of getting away with this.
10. I've got away with it so far. 11.
You dodged the rope last time.
12.
No matter what happens to me, the law will get you.
13.
No! No, Joan! Get down, Joan! He's got a gun!
Incredibly stupid, irresponsible, idiotic, unmitigated fools. You, PC-49, take the hand engraved Bulgarian biscuit.
And if it wasn't for that gunshot in your arm, Miss Carr, I'd say you ran a dead heat for those dubious honors.
The doctor says she's going to be all right, sir.
No thanks to you, you young dunderhead. Do you realize that by poking your insolent nose into something that's right off your beat, you were almost the cause of the death of this young lady?
Oh, please, sir, don't.
If you'd only realize, young fellow, that the law works in its own time, you'd have saved Miss Carr a bullet hole in the shoulder, and Inspector Wilson and myself a devil of a lot of trouble.
Aye, play fair, Inspector. Half a minute, Sergeant. Scully was on the way out when Archie went in. By the time you arrived, he'd have got clean away. And Archie did him up properly after he'd shot me. Give Archie some credit.
If I had the power, I'd give him 6 months without the option.
12 months? Risking our Miss Carr like that?
You both seem to have missed the most significant point of the lot.
And what's that?
If I hadn't gone in and tackled Scully from behind, he'd have shot Archie. And then how would your police force have coped with crime?
Well, I'll be...
And me too, sir.
That concludes The Case of the Lone Wolf, another incident in this series of adventures of PC-49, written by Alan Stranks. The cast was as follows. PC-49, Brian Rees. Joan Carr, Joy Shelton. Inspector Wilson, Leslie Perrins. Sergeant Wright, Eric Phillips. Scully, Oliver Burt. China, Roger Snowden. Herbie, John Sharp. The station sergeant, Frank Foster. The shop girl, Daphne Maddox. Production by Vernon Harris.
This program was originally broadcast to home listeners of the BBC.